cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Welcome to Big Stacks of Jacks. I'm Tom Hom. Mr. Brett Weber on the board. Mr. Frank Fahey. We also have SP Futures up 50 cents, Dow up 41, NASDAQ down 4. So a very slow morning so far. We've certainly got a busy week coming up with earnings and everything else. So I'm looking for a little rock and roll, even though we have Friday off for a good Friday. Frank, how are you?
Very good, thanks, Tom.
Well, that's good. You're, what makes you so very good? Just it's early yet? Nothing bad could happen?
Golf in the morning yesterday. That's when they should have it all the time. Save our afternoons for something else.
Yeah, it was early. Well, they managed to beat the storm. It was rain a little bit near the end, I guess. But did they ever really get whacked down there like they thought they would? I'm not. You know, who cares after the thing was over? But still,
I was looking at the radar. It was pretty heavy to the west of them. You know, towards Atlanta.
Yeah, they some pretty nasty. Well, I mean, I was mentioning to Maddie on the way, and I'm sure we've had worse April days than yesterday here. I don't know that I can remember one.
Mid-April,
yeah.
I remember. It seems like, you know, the first 3 or 4 days of baseball, we'd maybe get like one kind of crappy day where there'd be some sleet, maybe a little bit of snow on like April 3rd. Never on April 14th. Come on.
Yeah, plus it was not just a little bit of snow, it was all day. It was brutal.
It was all, now in the city, it didn't really stick. It was mostly just kind of slush and some ice. But in the suburbs, I heard that like St. Charles and out west got like 8 inches. I mean, good Lord.
It was really
slush. We had a solid 6 in Elmhurst.
Wow.
If it had been a degree or two warmer, it would have been really bad. I mean, cooler. Because the streets, they really weren't ready to salt them or anything. And I drove in from Orland, it was really bad. I mean, it was... Of course, people were going just as fast as normal, and we had a big ice patch on a bridge we whacked into this morning, Frank. I think it wasn't going very fast. It was right over Madison Avenue.
Wow.
Yeah.
Chief had the instincts of a 25-year-old pilot. He corrected, and we almost whacked a pedestrian, but we didn't, and it was all good.
But he was, he was a Daily supporter, I think, or a Joyce supporter. We're not sure the pedestrians. Frank, we have kind of crazy stuff this weekend. You know, it's funny. I just wonder. Sometimes people have to. Every once in a while, if there's a convention or a law that's not very well set, once in a while it goes. I guess something like this has to be challenged. But it really is amazing what the current group in Washington is challenging. Sort of everything, and I honestly don't get. I mean, I don't think anybody gets the protocol on these income taxes. I don't even know who started it, but somebody started and said, well, you know, I'll put my taxes out there. I got nothing to hide. So they put them out there, and people look at them, and then a day later, everybody forgets them. And I don't know that...
They forget them because there's nothing that onerous.
Perhaps. Well, there was a few eyebrows raised about how much money Obama made on... his wife's, who had the book, him or the wife, early on, the advance they got on the book.
Both of them, I think.
Yeah, they didn't do anything yet. And then he got all the money for the Nobel Prize for Peace, which I wonder if they wanted that one back. But what do you get, $1 million for that? I think. Something like that. Isn't a Nobel Prize $1 million, Manny?
Yeah, but for these guys, it's nothing.
Well,
what did Trump have to give Abe to nominate him for the Nobel Prize? I mean, this is a scam.
Well, what I'm saying is, now all of a sudden you got somebody. Now, it's clearly no law that people do this. It's more of a convention. But then it starts to be like an easement, though. If somebody drives over your property for 50 years, they get to drive over it forever, right? If you don't say anything about it the first week. So all of a sudden, here's a guy with you know, it's sort of clear. Like I said, nobody gave a rat's behind about Obama's or anybody else's. There's certainly Tricky Dicks. He was an attorney. But now this guy has got a where he clearly has Russian business interests. It's somewhat obvious, I think obvious, that during the campaign he told people that he wasn't doing any more business in certain parts, and he kept doing it. And people are a little concerned about how much money he's making at hotels where people from overseas are coming and staying in Washington.
That is a law, though.
Okay, but I'm saying how it ties all into the income tax. I mean, the guy is like pushing everything, but I don't know that.
Didn't he say multiple times he would show us his tax forms?
Yeah, well, that doesn't matter. He doesn't. He absolutely lies about
it. Does matter.
Well, it does to you.
I think we have to make his lies matter. Any politician's lies matter.
That would be nice. Where do you start?
Well, we are.
Yeah, we sort of.
We don't give up and say, "Oh gosh, there's not a law against it."
Well, what I'm saying is these things are every sort of knew what attorney-client privilege was till this guy blew that up too. I mean, the dude's blowing everything up. Although there is a certain truth. And what did Churchill say? That even fools can be right sometimes. There are other people have to understand that.
Uh-huh.
The idea about the people coming over the border, the migrants, the idea that the people who really want them here should maybe take them, an awful lot of people in this country feel that way, Frank. Because some of the people who are most out there about letting everybody in don't want anybody near them. There's a certain truth to that. I'm not saying that would be my policy, but there is a certain truth to that. Right?
Yes. Well, I don't think we're saying don't let them in. And I shouldn't say we, that they aren't saying don't let them in. What the conversation should be about is the process, and he's unwilling to talk about the process.
Well,
he's changing the subject. Do people have the right to ask for asylum? Fine.
Well, the question ought to be, if everybody got in the same room, I don't know if I'd want to bring Congress people to such a nice place, but is it time to, if he could possibly pull it off, which I don't think he can, is it time to pull people to Camp David, a group of about 12, both sides of the aisle, assuming they can not fight with each other, and say, all right, we do have cities that are shrinking in population, we do have this, should we find a way to essentially make, you know, let's say we're going to have 50,000 people, is there a way to make small communities that aren't going to be influenced right out of the gate by gangs and everything, and is there a chance we can make some of these areas work? I think there is a chance, Frank. I mean, I don't, you know, if it's done properly, but I don't see these guys doing it that way, this combination of Congress and President, do you? I mean, you got Youngstown has shrunk how much? I got to believe Canton has shrunk. I got to believe, I know the South Side and the West Side's here have shrunk. I mean, I don't know, does Milwaukee have holes in it? I don't know. Detroit surely still does. I mean, is there a place where we can find five or six cities to put 2,000 or 3,000 people? We ought to be able to, I would think.
How many people is he talking?
I don't know. The numbers fly back and forth. One place you read that there's way less people than there were 10 years ago. And some other places, it's this massive crisis. I mean, I don't know which. To be honest with you, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot about this, and I think a lot of people just listen to what their side is saying and somehow believe it. Go figure. But I mean,
how much of this problem is the fact that, you know, we have no heads in Homeland Security or the State Department?
Well, that's part of it, too.
I mean, only four of the top nine positions in the State Department are filled. Right now, we don't have a head of cybersecurity, yet he's whining about, and I agree with him on this, why hire Obama's head of cybersecurity, and he's incensed. And I think that's problematic. But we don't have one, do we?
I don't
believe
so.
Maddie, you're in the biz.
I don't think we do.
No.
Currently.
We don't have a head of Homeland Security. We have an acting head.
Well, we also have businesses.
Do we have a head of ICE? No. I mean, this is a starting point to where the problems are.
Well,
and as you brought up yesterday, how do you negotiate when one side has a moving target?
Well, there was, I was watching the, Mets, or Frank's talking about Manny's, I was watching, the guy, he's Meet the Press, right? The ladies, Brendan, what her name is Face the Nation. Why do I always get mixed up?
They're all interchangeable. Well,
there was a group of people at the one table talking about, the immigration thing and so forth and other stuff. And this one lady, I don't know where she was from. I don't think it was the liberal press.
Meet the Press is Chuck Todd.
That was Chuck Todd. One of the guests yesterday was this lady who was, and she says, you know, it's getting so problematic now for both sides that even if you wanted to negotiate and come up with a deal, the man changes his mind so fast that it's like the shifting sands. You literally, she goes, it's honestly reaching the point where you wonder if there's any stability there. I mean, she's about as far out as she could come and say, is the guy losing it? And she goes, even the Republicans will sit there and say, okay, we'll do this, and this is our fight against the Democrats, and 2 days later, it's over. It's a change. And
Joe writes in on Twitter, he says, Frank, you've got it exactly backwards. It's the Democrats who refuse to discuss anything regarding border security with the Trump administration.
Right. what is happening here is that people...
Didn't we have an agreement 6 months ago or something? It's so hazy because it moved so quickly, but wasn't there a compromise in Congress?
There was.
About DACA at all?
Yeah, there was. I mean,
somebody on the Democratic side had to discuss.
I think that it is interesting. There's three points of view here, and it's funny how I think the two people on the show today have a point of view, and yet virtually everybody else has a different point of view. And most people, without any shot at anybody, if you're conservative, whatever the president's bleeding out, that's your side. You don't even know what it is, but that's your side. Then there's, if you're liberal, you can't stand the guy, no matter what he says. You're on the other side, and whatever he does want, whatever he wants, you don't want. Then there's a few people left, I think, Frank. I know I am. You might lean a little bit more one way than the other, but I'm in the middle. Does anybody really know what's going on, and is there a solution here anywhere? And I could care which side the solution comes from. I just want to see. And I try and recognize all the things. If we said there's room for some people, Does that mean, in terms of moral hazard, that 200,000 people get up out of Ecuador or San Salvador and walk up here? And I heard some people yesterday on the liberal side say that you can't stop giving money to these places. And yet if I were to ask them, what exactly does the money go for, they probably couldn't tell me. And then on the Republican side, if I were to say we need to stop sending these people money, they couldn't tell me either. So somewhere along the line, somebody, before forming an opinion and really popping one out there, you should probably have somewhat clue what you're talking about. And it's very, very difficult. And I'm not accusing. I'm saying is it's very, very hard to figure out where you ought to be on this because I don't know where the money goes down there. I don't know who the hell could tell me. I don't think it's written anywhere. Does it go to the dictator? Does it go just for hospitals? Does it go just for schools? I don't know. Does anybody who has an opinion? I think probably not. Now, part of that, I mean, is there even anybody at the State Department that can tell you? Because there's nobody there. You know, so, I mean, to your point, Frank, so when people have hard and fast opinions on stuff like this, be advised that nobody knows what the hell they're talking about because there's no facts out there that I can see. Am I right, Maddie, or not? I mean, is that a middle approach?
It is a middle approach, and I think it's a sound one, and I think looking for a solution and weeding out the noise and not picking your side before you have any facts is probably the right way to do things.
And what percentage of the population is there? I think I'm alone.
It's a small percentage, and I try to do that, although, you know, I'm just as guilty as anyone else of sometimes, you know, reading the headline and then being outraged before you actually look into it. And I try to do better at that every day, and I hope everyone else does too. But it does serve you well to not pay attention to, you know, Trump is clearly just out there, but it's best to really kind of ignore that noise and actually look into the issue and try to look toward a solution. And you'll find that there's actually some pretty good ideas on both sides. Well, there's a lot of bad ones on both sides too, but.
Well, we are in this news media world. This is coming from somebody who's been around for a while. We have way more noise than we have content. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, And I don't know what we do about that, because you can certainly get tired of looking at the stuff long before you get the content, if you're not looking. I mean, Kevin, whether you agree with him or don't, on a lot of stuff, Kevin spends the time to dig through to the content, but God bless it, he's really good at it, and he's willing to work at it. And I don't know, you know, how many people are willing to do that? I mean, thank God we've got him on the show.
Kevin,
very few.
Kevin writes in, Trump put a DACA extension on the table during the shutdown. I was surprised, well, not really, that the Democrats didn't even ask to make it part of the final deal once the president showed openness to it. Do they want a fix, or do they just want the issue?
Well, that surely can be said for both sides. And then why do we...
I think that raises a greater point. I think both sides want the issue floating around come election time, so that they can point to the other side as being the reason why there's no resolution.
See, I'm a little more cynical.
I do have an ancillary question since we're talking about the media. If the media is so bad, why are so many of the people appointed as temporary heads in this administration from the media, whether it's the internet media or social media or Fox or whatever? Why?
Well, you know the answer to that. The media is only bad if it disagrees with you. So we know that. He appoints the media that agrees to him, agrees with him.
I
wouldn't appoint either.
Well, let's back up a hair. I'm going to say that the media issues have to do with nobody wants to pay for news. So the idea of Frank or a young Eric May who's on the show, or the gentleman who did the Tribune articles used to come out for the homicide guy, the chances of that guy getting a $25,000 budget to go down to El Salvador or Nicaragua and really come up with a 5-day in a row story is the same as me being a jackie in a
You're right about that when it comes to the print news, although
but I mean it's
some publications like The Athletic are kind of turning that around, at least on the sports front, and hopefully that translates to other things too. But certainly people pay for their television news.
But I'm saying they don't,
and it sucks.
But the content.
Why? But
you can't have an industry.
But there's billions of dollars in the Foxes and the CNBCs and the CNNs and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And yet their product is horrible. Why is it?
They're going to spend $1 million on somebody who can wear a short skirt or some guy who looks real good. When's the last time one of those people was in El Salvador working the streets on a story?
Yeah, that's. I mean,
none.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, there's how can I put it simply? There's less real reporters than there were 20 years ago.
Well, yeah, no one will pay for print news.
Well, but print news turns out to be other news, right?
Right, and I mean, that's, you know, I think we talked about this a year ago.
Here's the problem on print news. I lived on a block with about 30 houses in my last location, and I was maybe 7 of the people got the Chicago Trib or the Wall Street Journal or whatever, and I was the youngest person by 10 years. The average age of people getting the paper was in the late 70s.
Well, you can't, whatever it is, even if it's some gorgeous female or male reading it, it's print news. Somebody's reading the damn thing, right? I mean, somebody has to write it, whether it's in the newspaper or if it's on somebody's monitor. I'm saying there's less people doing the writing.
No, you're right. Yeah, that's clear.
Oh, definitely.
But the question is all that money that we used to spend on newspapers, we now spend on cable news, whether you know it or not. It's
right.
Part of your bundle.
Right.
So why don't they invest that money into actually doing some real reporting?
Evidently, it's not. It's more important for Fox to do what they're doing, to have beautiful people keeping the fight going. Evidently, that's the way entertainment is.
Well, it clearly drives ratings, which drives advertising revenue,
right.
And it's a vicious circle, and I get that. And it's not just Fox. The other ones do it, too. I mean, for God's sake.
What did Dr. J say?
Watch CNBC.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Or watch CNN. Watch, you know, any of those.
Well, read Yahoo. God bless. They're worse than CNBC. And that's CNBC. Who's the guy? The Democratic side.
CNN.
I mean, what did Dr. J say? Nobody pays for information. They pay for affirmation. What would happen on Fox if they stopped and gave a 10-minute serious thing about somebody going somewhere and doing a report and essentially filing his report on TV? How many people are on disability in this particular county and why and how it all happened? You know, like the guy wrote for the Washington Post. You could never give that report on TV. It would be bad TV. when I was over at Dr. J, he had a, was it a graduation party years ago, and he had the producer from CNBC was over there, some young guy. And he says, how come you don't want to come on CNBC anymore? I said, well, because the last time I was on, it was about Walmart earnings. I don't care about Walmart earnings. There were five other guys on the set. I got to say two words. And it took 2 hours out of my day to go over and put somebody's little makeup on my fat head. And, you know, I mean, my girlfriend did enough to give me crap about shifting my eyes back and forth to where there was no camera. I couldn't tell where the camera was. So she said I looked like Tricky Dick. So where's the upside? And I said, well, how come you have five people talking about a subject, nobody ever gets to give their whole opinion, and then you pull them away, and you have another five people talking about the same thing, you just do this all day long. He goes, yeah, that's what saved the station. What do you mean? Well, nobody, that's how you keep the same subject working all day. You never have actually anybody explain it or take their opinion all the way to the end, which is more TV than radio. I get that part, but they take it to the extreme. I said, the last day I was on, and it was, what's the one from 6 to 8, Frank? Is it Squawk on the Street or Squawk Box or one of the two? And, they had 21 guests. And I was just one of 21. I said, you could go just as easily with 20. You didn't need me. I mean, it's the truth. I mean, are you getting a chance to say anything? And, I mean, in fact, the one thing I did say, they gave me the hook. Cause it was the day that, what's his name? Warren Buffett bought the Burlington. And so Joe Kernan just happens to lob out. He goes, geez, Tom, what do you think of this? And I said, well, gee, Joe, you're kind of in my wheelhouse. I know something about railroads. And I said, you know, he's buying a monopoly. There's oil going on up there in some place. I mean, the man's smart enough to buy a monopoly. I mean, there's five railroads got together to be the Burlington Northern, and he just bought them. The whole northern part of the country. And there's oil to be discovered up there that everybody's talking about. So it's not like this is a genius move. I mean, duh. Joe said, well, that'll be enough from you know, anyway, that was the end of that. So, but I mean, yeah, it's all entertainment. Here's how, for the listeners who think I'm not conspiracy enough, I think all this crap is going on while 50 people essentially take over the entire country in terms of property, in terms of wealth, in terms of everything. I mean, because nobody cares about that. If you walk into, you don't even have to. I had a client I met this weekend. And he says, well, I'm conservative. I mean, okay, I'm kind of in the middle. I mean, it's like a badge of honor now for male to male. And, I mean, what does that even mean? I mean,
Good question.
And we don't even, does it mean you don't listen to one side, you only listen to one side? I get the part about, you know, a lot of where the Democrats are going now, a lot of where the young people are going is the, you know, socialism. I mean, and Frank and I were talking about that a little bit yesterday. And an awful lot of people see that word reverberating among young people who they assume are all Democrats, which probably isn't the right assumption.
I think the difference is, if you want a perspective from someone that's actually in their 30s and actually is a millennial, is that we look at the term for what it actually means, which is there's socialism all around us every day.
Right.
Older people look at socialism because they lived through the Cold War. They look at it as communism, which is different. But, you know, Medicare is socialism. I mean, there's a million social policies in place. Young people just think, instead of spending all this money on tax cuts for corporations and on defense spending and all other stuff, use that money and actually try to help people with education and with healthcare, and in turn, you'll pay yourself back. That's all it is. I don't know why that's so hard to understand.
And they don't differentiate between socialism and democratic socialism,
right?
Or Christian socialism. It's a continuum.
Well, let's continue our continuum here for the break. As we future Stone Change, be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now.
Right here, right now, right now. Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Mr. Frank Fahey on the phone. Matt Webb on the board, S&P futures up $1.50 now, NASDAQ futures down 1.25. By the way, our president says if it wasn't for the Fed, the Dow would be, what, 5,000 points higher, Frank, or some ridiculously stupid
up comment? 10,000 points higher, and growth would be 4%.
Unbelievable. I'm going to say nominal growth. He didn't think he knows the difference between nominal growth and... let's say we had growth of 7%, inflation of 10, like we used to have. Would Trump only talk about the 7%? I'm thinking so.
Natachi wrote in regarding that exact Trump tweet saying, was deregulation and a corporate tax cut really worth this, Chief?
I'm going to say, some of the deregulation, I think, was a good move. The other guy's got a little... Everybody knows how I feel about the fiduciary rule. It sounds good, but it wasn't very well thought out anyway. At least in one man's opinion. I can explain that if people want me to. DAX up 16.1%. FTSE down 7.1%. CAC around up 6.1%. Again, this is the holiday week, at least for the markets, although I don't know how much the rest of the world. How much the rest of the world's off on Good Friday? I don't think very much.
Maybe the banks and the markets. All you guys that don't work that much, you guys get it off. Everyone else works.
All of us that pray and are in church?
That's right.
They should make everybody go to church who's off Good Friday.
I like that idea.
Now, if you made everybody go to church and put some money in the hat, what do you think?
Then they'd probably rather work.
Nikkei up 298, 1.4%. Shanghai down 10.3%.
Hang Seng down 99. Doesn't the Nikkei have like some big holiday starting here pretty soon here, Frank? They're off for like a week or something. Is that this time of the year they do that? I don't think it's today, but we'll talk about that tomorrow. Or we'll talk about that later. David will know. David knows all this stuff. Oil is down 64 cents, 63.25. Brent down 65. Natural gas down 3 cents. RBOB down 2 cents. Wow. I actually got gas for $2.95. I thought I'd have to pay over $3, but I did not. Gold is $12.89. Wow, it's down $6. Silver down 8 cents. Not so good for gold. We're not sure why that is. Copper down a cent, $2.92. Can't seem to get to $3. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. The expressways are an absolute nightmare all over the Chicagoland area due to slush and snow mix that fell all day yesterday. In the city, there's no accumulation, just some slush and some ice on the ground. But in the suburbs, there's all kinds of snow. And
look,
this
out,
is
look out your window. Look what's going on.
Yeah, all kinds of slick spots. And the Eisenhower is completely congested. And we're looking out our window at Congress, and it's a parking lot right now. And there's nothing on my screen that shows what happened as far as what's blocking the Eisenhower on the outbound side. But we do
look
have
all the guys doing the U-turns.
Yeah, we do have a crash on the inbound side of the Eisenhower at Central Avenue, a little bit out to the west of us. That's blocking the right lane. And then just east of there, Cicero at Flournoy Street, right off of I-290, there is an accident, too, that's affecting the exit. But there must be something newer that's happened because we're looking at it outside of our window, yet it's not on my screen, so I'll keep you posted on that.
Why don't you call in at a tip line and you'll see it on your screen?
Actually, it just came across. So close due to an accident right at the Burn Interchange on the outbound I-290 westbound. It's closed right now, so all the lanes are blocked, and that has all these cars that we're looking at miserable trying to head west on Congress onto 290 are completely stopped. So avoid that if at all possible. On the south side, we had a couple of rollover crashes earlier this morning on I-57. Those are clear, but I-57 has been slow in both directions, especially on the northbound side all morning. So give yourself plenty of time if that's your expressway of choice. We also have an issue. Dan Ryan inbound just before 18th Street, there is a crash, and that has the Ryan slowed down. Stevenson, high traffic volumes and no accidents to report. Same for the Edens and Kennedy. Out west in the suburbs, there's some crashes off the expressways. Route 83 between 55th and Chicago Avenue, there is a crash. Just north of there, Roosevelt Road, which is Route 38 at Route 83, there is an accident. And then on the other side of Roosevelt Road, on Route 83, there's a crash too. So a lot of slick spots out there. In the northern suburbs, looks like Dempster at Milwaukee, there is a crash. And we also have one. Of course, it just went away on my screen.
The more you look at that screen, the more they're going to pop up like popcorn.
I know. Route 53 southbound at Palatine Road, there's an accident that's been moved to the left shoulder. So I think the moral of the story is give yourself plenty of time as you're heading out this morning because there is all kinds of crashes and issues to report. Weather today, we'll have lots of sunshine today. It's going to be much colder than normal, but better than yesterday. We'll reach a partly cloudy high of 51, whereas yesterday we were in the 30s all day, which is only about 20 degrees below normal. Today we're about 8 degrees below normal, so that's all right. Right now it's sunny and 32, going up to a high of 51, so we'll melt most of that snow today, and then tomorrow we'll be in the mid-60s, and that'll melt the rest of it. So then we'll have flooding issues to worry about. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 89. Right now it's mostly clear and 63. In sports, White Sox went to the Bronx and took 2 of 3 from the Yankees, winning yesterday 5-2. Cubs were postponed, obviously, due to the weather, so they flew out to Miami. They'll take on the Marlins tonight. Diamondbacks doubled up the Padres 8-4, but the big sports story of the day was Tiger Woods. He won his 5th Masters, first in 14 years. He won his 15th major, first in 11 years, so now he's just 3 back of Jack for the all-time major win. Tiger at 43 wins the Masters. He shot 13 under, one shot ahead of Dustin Johnson, Xander Schauffele, and Brooks Koepka, who are all 12 under. Jason Day, Webb Simpson, and Tony Finau, along with Francisco Molinari, who was the leader most of the weekend, were 2 shots back at 11 under. So a great Masters. Tiger Woods, his purse, a total purse was $11 million. He takes home $2.07 million of that 11.
Chief. The with the guy who plunked 2 in the water on the par 5 or the par 3? Molinari. What did I tell you, dude?
The 12th.
Was he put in the... Was it the 12th or the, was it par 5 or the par 3? I think it was par 3. They plunked 2 in the way because they put the drop zone where you had the pin placement. The drop zone was no picnic. The second shot.
Well, he had two double bogeys on the back nine. He double bogeyed the par 3 12, and then he double bogeyed the par 5 15.
So he was in the water on both.
Yeah, and so obviously that did him in. He lost by two shots, and he gave up four shots right there.
So this morning he's damming up Ray's Creek as we speak. The it was fun. Fun to watch, and it's nice to see somebody be able to withhand, at least push back the sands of time for a little while.
So I was watching it in the morning like Frank, and it was enjoyable that it was on in the morning, and then I had to step away. And then I turned it back on in the afternoon, and it was right where I'd left off in the morning.
Everybody's so right there.
They, yeah. They restarted it on CBS. So then I watched it, even though it was delayed, I got to watch it basically right where I left off, so it worked out well.
Because it ended, I watched it all the way through, and it was ended, what, about 2:30, 2 o'clock? It was early.
The real Masters, yeah, the live version ended, yeah, probably like 2 o'clock.
Because there were three people in a group, and there's normally two the last day, and they went off on 1 and 10. Although the people who went off on 10 were the schlumps. You didn't see them. It is amazing, and all you have to do is drop one shot back, and it's like somebody shot you or beamed you out. You don't even get a spit on camera. I guess I love it when they do that. I thought it was really pretty good. But to get back to the socialism argument, anybody historically, if ever there's a book anybody wants to read, I'm going to say the first two-thirds of it. The last third was all about Occidental Petroleum. I didn't give too much rats behind on that. Read a book called Arm & Hammer by Arm & Hammer. I don't know if you ever read that, Frank, but it's
No.
It is the first two-thirds of it is the most spectacular period piece of growing up in the Depression and what was going on politically and everything else and who was making money and how and why in the Depression or Prohibition. And I found it absolutely fascinating. And Arm & Hammer, for those younger people or people who don't remember, Arm & Hammer is known mostly from being the crotchety, tough old boss of Occidental Petroleum. And what he did there was when Libya first you know, degenerated into something, and they took over all the the assets of who was in there, Standard Oil, God knows who. He basically went in and bought some of these. They couldn't run them, so he went in and bought some of these assets back from the government, cents on a dollar, and actually made sort of peace with whoever. I don't think it was before the Mo Man, so I don't know who the hell it was, but a long time ago. But anyway, Arm & Hammer he died when he was like 97, or might not have been that old, but he had virtually 10 careers. Made his money originally by selling something called, in the pharmacy business, he was selling something called tincture of ginger. Frank, Eddie, you know what that is?
I don't.
It's somewhat of it's essentially a medicine from back in the day that really had you, had ginger and alcohol. So during Prohibition, people would sit up at the counter and get a shot of this and some seltzer water, and you had a highball. And he was selling more and making more dough, and it was essentially a medicinal product that really was booze. But cases and cases were flying out. He had his big house in Greenwich Village, and then part of this that I'm getting to is relevant to the conversation. The other stuff's interesting, but not all that relevant, is that his dad, during the Depression, there were a lot of rallies and things regarding essentially an alternative form of government because the quote, capitalist system wasn't working so hot, right? I mean, everybody who had a farm was pretty much bankrupt. Everybody's bank stole everybody else's dough. I mean, it was sort of a rough go. And the idea that, the modern idea that everybody stood fast and absolutely were convinced that this, our capitalist system was the way to go and nobody said boo, it was all BS. There were a lot of people who were questioning it and saying, well, is the Soviet system, which was being, and it wasn't in that long, is it ultimately better? Is the French almost went socialistic. I mean, there were people all over the world essentially questioning the economic system, and why wouldn't you? Just like young people now are questioning, what kind of system is this, where all the guys at all the go keep telling me how good it is, but other people tell me they can't get a decent paycheck. I mean, well, because somebody else is making too much dough. I mean, it's not the same hardship, but it's the same questioning. It's the same unevenness. And right now, we've actually reached the point where what percentage of the population gets more of the income the last point this bad was 1928. Okay, and the next year was 1929, and the stock market crashed. So it's not healthy. Any country, guys like Lou and people who are smarter than this than me, tell you any country that loses its middle class, going all the way back to Rome, has problems. And we're losing ours. And we better figure out a friggin' way to get it back together where some people don't get all the dough, you know, free up that paycheck a little bit for somebody else. And I know this is anathema to people that, you know, even Henry Ford was smart enough to say, if I don't pay my people enough, what am I going to sell my cars to? Right? But now everybody thinks that there's enough other people that you can sell your stuff to, you don't care about your employees, and I think that's wrong. So to question something else is not blasphemy. I mean, people are supposed to question. Americans are here because they questioned, right? So it's up to the other people to say, no, we have certain parts of society that are socialistic. Clearly, everybody paying for bridges, everybody paying for roads.
Right, that's why I don't understand why this is so hard to understand.
Well, but the idea is the profit motive still worthwhile? And I think the answer to that is yes. And I think the idea that every single person who makes more money than somebody else shouldn't, and you should find a way to tax it, I think is wrong as well. I mean, nobody rails more about Commonwealth Edison being a monopoly for years and years and years, and has the government basically by the two stones, and gets whatever they want. Nobody rails more about that than me. But I also know that the idea that everybody, that when you have and I know Maddie's arguing this before, if the Masters was on December 31st, and Tiger won $2.2 million, and he lived in California, between the state and the federal government, they wanted to take like 70% of it. You know what? It's too friggin' high. It's too high. I mean, 25, 30, 35%, that's all you get. Somebody gets to earn the rest. I mean, come on. Why would anybody want to earn it? I mean, there's a combination here. And parts of our society are leaning way too much. The parts that should be capitalistic, or shall we say, competitive, are not competitive anymore, which is a big problem. Like the socialist ideal that if everybody just had Medicare, everybody just had education, we see what happens in this country. For some reason, we're too greedy and we're too crooked to be socialists, like the Swedish are. I honestly believe that. But in Denmark,
like the Germans,
I don't know what there's. But I'm saying
we're worse than the Germans or the Canadians or the French.
I mean, they have boards of directors that are half union and half stockholders.
Yeah, can you imagine
that
here?
A lot of the places, the union's the biggest stockholder.
Yeah, can you imagine that here?
You think we're that much worse than the Canadians and the Germans and the French and the English and everyone else?
In a lot of ways, yeah.
I think we're the same.
No, what I'm saying is we decided we wanted to get more people education. Okay, which is somewhat socialistic. Obviously, the GI Bill was socialistic, but
it was the greatest thing this country's ever done.
Okay, but here's what I'm saying, Matty, is if you have a situation where you have all these young men, unfortunately, when I say that, this is not being sexist, because I honestly believe that should have been expanded to include the ladies who were in the waves and the wax and stuff, and it was not. Okay, so that in some ways I would try and fix the GI Bill. But look what happened. It was a $1,500 investment at a time when the country needed people educated. They didn't care whether it was economics, they didn't care whether it was accounting. All of a sudden we ended up with a very educated populace, and it didn't cost very much. It was a spectacular investment. But then once you get involved in this, let's give money to schools, let's give people loans. Look what the government intervention. Part of the reason why you're paying $65,000 to go to Notre Dame is the government having their fingers in there. It's not competitive at all. So we took that brand of socialism. Hey, Steph, how are you?
Hey.
We're ranting and raving about socialism.
How are you?
I don't know what that is. That's a giveaway. That's not socialism. It's not competitive. It's not anything. It's just a horrible idea. I guess you could put a name on it. Am I right, Frank and Steph? Steph, you just piled in. But I was saying that the GI Bill at the time, what do you suppose the average tuition for somebody in the GI Bill? My stepfather went to DePaul. I'd be stunned if the federal government paid more than $1,000 for his 4 years at DePaul. came out when
our
I counted
biggest bubble from a financial perspective is the student loan industry.
Right.
I mean, it's the only loan in your entire life, only financial thing that you cannot get out of. So you file bankruptcy, you cannot get out of your student loans. You basically, it's the only loan that's guaranteed. You'll die.
And the education department now has basically stopped overseeing for-profit schools to make sure that they are actually giving you education.
Yep.
Well, what about the not-for-profit schools? Well, they're giving you anything. They just get a pass?
Well, you got to start somewhere, and the fraud is greater on the for-profit side.
Well, I guess I don't disagree, Frank, but how are you ever going to get any competition in the schools if every time somebody does branch out and do it, quote, for profit, you jump on them like white on rice regulatorily? I mean, how many people, you think somebody goes to the University of Illinois for 2 or 3 years and quits and owes somebody $150,000 that's good for society?
No, it's not. But I think the point really is that, you know, making money readily available or very easily available to go to school has had an adverse effect, because what it's done is it's enabled schools to increase their prices continuously that don't make any market sense, because there is so much money available for kids to go, and it's put kids in a really bad situation, because you get into, you know, $100,000 worth of debt when you have absolutely no income potential. And even if you do come out of school and do have income potential, $100,000 to pay back, or $40,000 or $60,000, whatever, still is not an easy feat with the current salary and the lack of increased salaries over their lifetime. So, you know...
And throw in the fact that they're paying 7% for education or 5.5% for education loans when Goldman Sachs gets money for 1.25%.
Exactly.
Well, you guys all scoffed at the Chiefs' three solutions to three starts to the solution of what's going on in our society. You all scoffed at my trickle-up theory.
I missed your trickle-up theory.
I was going to cut off credit card interest rates at like 18 or 15 was still ridiculously high. I was going to bring student loan debt down to about 4.5% because the government's doing it and they're paying too. They don't have to scalp 4% of their own population. And I want to raise the deduction for capital losses. So if somebody starts a business and loses money, they can start another one. Take that from 3,000 to 100,000. Those three things,
well,
I think...
I don't disagree with some of those aspects, but instead of actually tacking them to a number, I would tack them to a percentage of what the Fed's rate is. Because, as we've seen in Illinois, and you know, when you tack something to an interest rate, you make it an actual interest rate, and the world changes, it doesn't fluctuate with you, and then you kind of can get stuck.
Well, I'm saying right now I would like to see it 15, and if you want to put that into a formula, more power to you. I'm with you, but I'm saying right now, this 22, 25, 27 is a little absurd.
Kevin writes in, and I think I agree with this. I think it's a good point.
Wait a minute, you can't agree with Kevin.
Well, you can have an open mind.
Kevin's agreeing with us? Jeez.
Well, I'm agreeing with Kevin. He says GI Bill education was compensation for service. I consider a free college proposal that trades tuition for service, but that isn't Bernie. Or, you know, those in that group, which I see, that's how you work together to find a solution. You find some common ground and then you work toward it. I think that's a fair point. Now, what is that service? That would be to be determined. I don't think everyone needs to go in the military necessarily, but whatever that service is in exchange for getting, you know, services, whether it's education or healthcare or whatever, I think that's a good starting point.
Help people who are mentally ill. You know, support our forests, something.
Well, whatever it is, though, and Kevin is obviously in a place where they're trying to knock down the cost of education. Whatever it is, those service you're doing is worth the $280,000 check to Northwestern. I mean,
well, that's problem number one.
Yeah.
We know that. David writes in, and this is also a good point.
Wait a minute. You agree with David now?
I didn't say I agree, but it's hard not to. He says...
What have we done to David? He wrote something that you agreed with.
I know. He said, this is an excellent place to start the conversation. Why don't the good people of Illinois show us how they make their previous and current failed socialist programs whole before imposing their brilliance on the rest of us?
Well,
it's hard to argue.
It's hard to argue. Well, you know, one of my buddies, this is a long time ago, he's in his law firm, and one of the dudes was trying to get a load of this stuff. The guy's trying to sail around the world, right? Well, not all one time, because he only gets like 3 weeks off, or 4 weeks, or wherever. So even though he was a partner at the place, so he'd sail across the Atlantic. Somehow he made it down to Miami, so he sails across the Atlantic, and he parks his boat. I guess you dock your boat in like Spain or someplace. So the next year he heads across to Greece, and he made it to Greece and finally sold it. So the hell, I wasn't going the rest of the way. But he's up in Mackinac, comes back from one of the bars up there, and let's just say he wasn't a question of whether he should be driving. He probably should have been walking. He hops onto his boat, trips, falls, and his face goes right up against one of the knuckles. You know, big mess up with his mouth. Heads to the doctor. The guy goes, I got nothing to do. I'll fix this right. The next morning, the guy's doing pretty good considering. He messed his face up. He comes down to Chicago, get the sutures out, and the guy goes, I can't take those out. He goes, what do you mean? They're just stitches. He goes, no, they're not. Who did this? Some guy did this. Is a master. I got to send you to plastic surgeon just to. Because this guy did a masterful job. Who was this guy? Turns out it was a guy who he'd gone to school to become a plastic surgeon in order to pay off his student loan debt. He had to do community medicine in some place, so he was hanging out in this space. And some guy wanders in and with his landed on his face, drunk. And so he fixed his face. You could not tell this guy didn't have a scar anywhere. It was unbelievable work. But the dude was working off his education. I don't know what would happen if he came in with a broken leg. The guy might have putzed that, but he was good with the cut. But Michigan's had that kind of a, and Kevin maybe can talk to that, but Michigan's had that kind of a program for a long time for the medical school people. All right, Frank, give us a market thought, then we're booting you. What do you think? Steady all
okay,
week?
Okay, well, I'll miss you. More of the same. I mean, we had Mnuchin saying, hey, we're on the final lap on China, but we're only up a quarter, so you're on your own here.
What about the earnings this week? Going to be surprises? J.P. Morgan.
We'll be surprised that the banks make as much as they did.
Well, Wells Fargo is actually down pretty heavy since we actually made some pretty good dough on a pretty good dough. Had a winning time spread. How's that? Pretty good dough. How south side is that? And a winning time spread. Thank God we got out quick because the thing's way down now. We did like the 48, I think, straight under 46. They didn't like Wells Fargo as much as they did J.P. Morgan. J.P. Morgan, I got up again today. So it's trading 111.50. So their earnings look good and on further review are good. Wells Fargo look good and on further review, I guess, kind of suck, basically. Or whatever.
Well, does anybody really trust Wells Fargo or their management?
As of now, probably no. So
anyway. No. So there's the gotcha on that one.
Well, Frank, if the market goes crazy, we'll have you back in a week. If it's slow, see you next Monday, bud. We'll be right back. Okay. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks. S&P futures down a whole quarter. NASDAQ futures down 4.25. Dow futures actually up about 30. Be right back, Miss Stephanie Koenig. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Well, up at Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howley. Mr. Matt Weber. She's Miss Stephanie Koenig. And the RSP futures down 50 cents. As the futures down 350. Doppel boost had Citigroup earnings. They missed on the revenue and they beat by a couple of cents on the bottom line. I have the stock down 42 cents, trading 67. Two things this morning, Steph. If you would have come in with us, you would have noticed probably one thing that Maddie, of course, did not notice. It was the first morning this year where there was light up in the sky. Do you notice that, Manny?
That would have been a bit pleasant change.
Yeah, until we
Matt, got... can you turn me up? Volume dropped.
And until the we got to the Madison Avenue Bridge and almost spun out. Boy, it was all light. But I got to believe this sun has this stuff all fixed by now, Manny, one would think. But
it's still only 32 out right now, though, so it's right. It's kind of hovering, but the sun's definitely helping.
Yeah, we...
Did you spin out on the bridge last night? Because... My significant other kind of did a 360 on one of those bridges last night.
Well, when we don't pick you up, we get off at Madison. You got to kind of scoot across pretty quick because there's guys flying from your left. So, but you know, I didn't go across that fast. When I made the left turn, the back end wanted to go, but I didn't realize it. I've been out west. I used to drive out in the snow all the time, and
the instincts were still there. I turned right into it and got control right away, and I was surprised at myself.
It was good. It was quality driving. We didn't kill the pedestrian that was to our right, and we didn't smack into the bridge and flip over it onto the expressway.
No, that would not have been good.
That would have been bad for both of us. So it was all
good.
What
about the guy we landed on, the Suburban with a full tank?
Yeah, not good.
No.
So yeah, my significant other had the exact same problem coming over Chicago Bridge last night. He slid, ended up doing a 360, just missed a head-on, and missed hitting the bridge. So something, it was slippery yesterday.
Well, when I drove back from Orland, it was messy as all get out, but it was still, it was all just slush. There was no miss, you know. You didn't miss any. I suppose if you would have hit the slush hard enough, you would have skidded. But
yeah, it got below freezing last night, so all that slush turned into ice, and I think people are running into that. And they always say, you know, especially on bridges and overpasses, and you don't really think much of it, but it is true. The ice is on the bridges and overpasses right now. So be careful.
Yeah.
So, Steph, yesterday morning I pile out of the Menards at, you know, 7:30, like I'm wandering around Sunday morning, and there's this guy. I don't know if it was a guy, I assume. Let's put it this way. Since he was that stupid, I assume it was a guy. Back window totally encased. Side windows and totally encased. Both outside rear view mirrors totally encased. The guy's driving along. Isn't that special?
Yes, that's...
Can you be that lazy? I mean, I guess...
Problem waiting to happen.
I guess you can be. So, Steph, the kind of debates we're firing around now, I mean, you know, what is our... I don't know right now how I would, again, everybody I think knows, even though I will try and give all sides of the story, that nobody's more of a free marketer than I am, somebody who traded on the trading floor for 19 years, and the idea that it was you know, it was an open auction, and it was you against everybody else, and it was just a question of talent and maybe a little luck. You know, I love that world. And but I'm pretty good at picking out industries that are no longer, competitive, and there's this crossover between capitalism versus competitiveness, and somewhere along the line, I think we better figure out what the hell we're going to be in this country. And I don't know that anybody has a clue right now. I mean, I'm no socialist, but if you were to ask me to go back to school, I'd be the oldest fart there, and write a PhD paper, which is better. Democratic socialism or crony capitalism. I'm not sure how that paper would come out, Steph. I mean,
I'm with you. I'm definitely not a socialist by any means. And, I guess I have become someone who's definitely capitalistic, but capitalistic with some regulation. I've come to believe, I think, is the way forward, because based on your previous conversations you were having, I completely agree that, you know, the loss of the middle class is clearly historically proven, that revolution usually follows pretty closely after that, in any financial system, whether it was a monarchy or a republic or whatever. So that doesn't work. You know, and it's usually, it's been about 200 years since we started ours, and isn't that usually the time when things kind of get a little unrestful?
Well, we had that. We managed to make it through the Depression. I don't know, Steph, what would you think? And, Maddie, you know, you've heard me bleed about it enough, and I'd love to hear some tweets on this. If the war didn't show up, how do you think the Depression... What do you think the history would have written about coming out of that stuff?
Well, I mean, if we're going to look at history that way and then look at what we've got today, maybe similarly. I mean, we're kind of bumping along, and it doesn't mean that we're not doing all right. It's just that our society, certain people are doing really well, and certain people are not doing well at all, right? And what the war did was it took all of those different levels and it made it basically a level playing field, because, you know, most of the male population, no matter what economic level you came from, was put on a level playing field and sent to Europe or Asia to fight the war. So not only did that make everyone from an integration perspective, understands better who other people who they wouldn't normally get along with, or I should say, come in frequent contact with in their daily lives. But when they came back, they all had shared experiences, and you know, it's a lot easier to have sympathy for your fellow man when you have a similar experience.
Well, plus the boom in industry, because unlike the rest of the countries, ours wasn't wrecked. I mean, a lot of people were dead, which is, you know, individually families were wrecked, but the no, you know, other than Pearl Harbor, and they really didn't destroy Honolulu either. Nothing was really wrecked here. So you had all these what they used to call them, where you couldn't buy rubber, you couldn't buy silk, you couldn't buy what they used to call that. God, what's the word, Steph?
I don't know, but you were restricted with what.
Yeah, what you could buy,
sell, or purchase.
So now all these people come piling back. In the meantime, you essentially invented, you know, the inventions that come back from war. All of a sudden, everybody wanted a washing machine. Everybody wanted, not so much a dryer yet, but a lot of stuff people wanted. That you know, and you invented TV in 1948, right? Pretty much, or 47. So there was all this stuff that, you know, essentially millions of people came back and they all needed it tomorrow. I mean, nobody been able to buy tires for their car for 4 years. I mean, I don't think there was any car production from 42 on, was there? If there was, it was very small. Because
the question is, how do you relate that? I mean, we have had the Iraq war going on, which has had major, major medical breakthroughs, which we don't realize, but we see a lot of. And then the question is, you know, what other breakthroughs we've had? GPS, small phones.
Yep.
I mean, a lot of technology that's probably, some of it's come out of that, but it's not the same. We're not getting the same reaction. Why is that? Is that because we have an all-volunteer army? Is it because we didn't have enough people over there? I mean, because it's a similar situation in some respects.
Well, it is, except it's the big cities. I mean, I'm going to go on a limb here because I know some people here that we share the floor with. One of the ladies' son has been there for, you know, five times, so it's unfair to say that nobody from the big cities has fought in any of these wars, but it's a very small amount. It's only like 11% of all the people who have gone overseas are from the big cities. I mean, this is a small-town phenomenon. Because it's the people that have gone are these National Guard units and things. If you get my extended family's in Columbus. I haven't been there in a while. I need to go. But I get up on my usual early Sunday morning and grab the paper. I'm reading in the Columbus Dispatch. All the little towns, this is when, you know, we were more in Iraq and more in Afghanistan than we are now. The comings and goings of these, like, motor vehicle units and this kind of unit and that kind of unit, and every once in a while they've had some towns around there where, you know, a bomb landed on the motor vehicle unit and like 7 or 8 or 10 people are gone from a small town. I mean, God, Steph, that was the whole movie about that, was it Saving Private Ryan? Or what was the one where Band of Brothers, they all came from the same town? I mean, you don't normally get that, but in the kinds of wars we have now, you're almost as much, I won't say as much, but you're almost as much in the firing line, you know, fixing a tire on a Jeep than you are out on the front line, because, you know, it's all over the place. But my point being is, to define an economic system right now, a lot of people, I mean, it bothers me when the people that are on financial news, and I get it, they look a lot better than me. I get that part. But for God's sake, if you're going to talk about capitalism or competitive or stuff, where don't point at an industry that has, you know, three big companies left with their nose up the ass of government. Tell me it's competitive. I mean, what does Shanny say, man? You don't pee on my shoes and tell me it's raining. I mean, you know, what are we doing here? I mean, that's not. You're going to tell me your electrical? Warren Buffett came out the other day and said that airline business will always be competitive. What is he smoking? Has he got the good stuff or what? I mean, is anybody?
It's more competitive than a lot of other industries we're familiar with.
But I mean, depends on where you live. If you live in Chicago, it's competitive. You live in Cincinnati, not so. If you're one airline and no Southwest, how competitive is that? If you try and get in the business and you can't get a landing slot and can't get a gate, even though there's nothing but gates available. I mean, it's on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being perfectly competitive, 1 being monopoly, I give it a 3.5.
maybe a three, Steph. It's not. It's not.
The barriers to entry are huge. Yeah. I mean, the amount of money you need to start an airline is incredible. But
So when you talk about, you know, you mentioned earlier, you know, regulation, I honestly think that the government needs to have, if they're going to, quote, regulate, I think what you need to do is, if you maintain competition, you don't need to regulate so much.
Agreed, but I think the problem is at the moment, so when I talk about regulate, I don't necessarily mean put a law on that says you can or can do this, but back to your point about competition, right? So we either need to start breaking down some of these monopolies, oligopolies, or whatever, you know, into smaller organizations. You know, and the argument against that is that to compete globally, you need to have these large behemoths in order to compete with, let's say, China, that's got, you know, the whole government behind certain industries, right? So that's the other side of the argument. And if that's indeed true, which I don't know that it is, then it's important that we put some regulation around, you know, whether, you know, to enable the middle class to be successful in those kind of large environments. And I'm not 100% sure how to do this. Like, you know, I'm not an expert on this, and I welcome lots of other people's ideas. I just happen to have thought about it a bit. But I
come
think
on, Steph, you were spotted reading a book without pictures last week. We know you know some of this stuff.
But I think it makes a really big difference with these huge, huge corporations. And you and I have talked about breaking up these monopolies before, and the value and the competitiveness that it adds to a marketplace, and the opportunities that it, you know, if you've only got two companies and you've only got two CEO positions which are available, which are high makers, and you've only got, you know, however many next level down and next level down and next level down, you know, there's nowhere for people to go in terms of moving up in their careers.
Well, I go back to what my, and again, I quote the guy more than I should, but because he talked a lot, and everybody asked a million questions. You know, whenever he went, the guy was speaking, so wherever he was, I'd go sit. Milton Friedman was my guy, and he was convinced, Steph, and he goes, the paper he really wanted to write, he thought two things. One is that once you reach he thought a lot of stuff, but the two things he mentioned in this area was that he thought that a monopoly might be a little better off, better for society than like a duopoly. Because he thought that was even more inefficient. But he actually thought that when you reach a certain size, if you get bigger, you get less efficient and not more. But you get more dominant because you get lazier. So he would probably argue that in the drug industry, even with China, or if, you know, somebody, if we had this discussion somewhere, you know, some idiot would come up and say, you need to be big because you God knows what you're going to get from Mars or someplace. I mean, there's always somebody that you're competing against, right? He would probably argue that right now, Merck is no more efficient than Upjohn was, that Squibb was, that Searle was, you know, the ones that they all took over. But he'd probably say Upjohn was big enough, that you didn't gain anything by two Upjohns getting together. In fact, you might have lost. Because now they don't have to be as sprightly because the one competitor is gone. I mean, maybe there's some PhD thesis around that could prove or not prove that, or at least have an opinion better than mine. But I honestly would agree with that. I think once you reach a certain point, I don't know that. I think you get bigger and bigger. I think you get sloppier. I don't know that you get better.
Well, no, I mean, I agree. It just, I keep thinking back to, like, family size, you know?
Yeah.
You certain amount of, especially if you're working on a farm, there's a certain number of children you have that help the economics of the farm and help you move forward and get things done, and then you get to a certain point and it's, you lose your efficiency, you just have more mouths to feed, right?
Well, so, I mean, think about a farm economy stuff, and let's use that as an ample example because it's simple. I mean, if you have 1,000 acres, say, now there's going to be the best machines that the money can buy, okay? And I'm going to guess that if you buy those machines and use them on a 1,000-acre thing, the things are sitting in the barn, you know, most of the days of the year. So there's probably an efficient size of a farm, okay? But now you can go
do the service from some other guy too. He might have the property and he leases out your stuff for when he needs to do it. So there's ways to get around this, you know what I'm saying? But by and large, if you just look at the one farm, there's going to be a spot where you can maximize the use of, say, you and a few helpers with the best machinery there is. And there's you can do 100,000 acres, okay? And then the same stuff, you can harvest 100,000 acres, and you got the same crap where you can go back and fertilize. I mean, I don't know what you're doing on a farm, but depending on the crop, I guess. I'm not so sure that if that's the case, I don't know that a farm that's 150,000 gets you any more. There's some number there where you're as efficient as you can get, I think. And when you go over that, I don't know that, you know, your human resource department, probably a really good one, maybe they can handle 1,000 people. I don't know if they can handle 5,000, Steph. Maybe two companies with 1,000 apiece are a little more nimble. I don't know. But the idea that the bigger and bigger is constantly better, I don't buy it. I never have. I mean, if right now, if Merck were to get together with Pfizer, I'm going to say my gut says less efficient, not more.
Well, you know, I'd like to hear Maddie's thoughts. He's been agreeing with you today so far, so, you know.
Oh, he agreed with Kevin and what's his name? David. Yeah. Not David Antelman, David Parks.
I stepped away for a minute, so I missed most of your conversation, but so I'd have to get
synopsis. We're talking about the bigger you get, I think at some point you get less efficient.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I can speak to that personally. Citigroup beat, by the way, at 187.
Stacks up 23 cents. It was down 46.
They beat by 7 cents. But, you know, my company, when I started there in 2011, end of December 2011, so 7.5 years I've been there. We were a lean, mean fighting machine. I was about 800 employees. Just, you know, past startup mode, but still a young company that was working toward potentially filing IPO. And growing rapidly in a business, cybersecurity, that was really taking off in you know, 2011, 2012. And then we got acquired by a huge conglomerate out of Asia, and basically like the Verizon of Asia. And now it's, I mean, there's a policy for the policy for the policy. And there's a procedure for the procedure for the procedure, and you have to get 50 approvals to do anything, and it's just awful. I mean, it's just completely changed the culture. It used to be everyone working together to achieve a common, whether it was a sale or whatever, and now it's like you're working against everyone, hoping that you can get past them to get the sale. I mean, it's really... So in that regard, when you talk about inefficiencies, and I don't know if it's because they're publicly traded and it's just regulation and they have to do all this stuff, or they've just found that when you're so big that that's just how you do it. Every level has to approve something all the way to the top to get anything done. But it sucks.
Well, I think there's only a certain amount of people in any industry. I mean, certainly in mine. I mean, at PTI, I mean, I understand why Merrill Lynch does not design people's individual portfolios for them, especially using like an option product, which is a little more complicated, to help people hedge their portfolios. You would never trust, you know, 30,000 people to do that all on their own. So everything has to become very, very formulated, and you have to stick people whether they're little rounded edges or not. You got to stick them in a square hole or the other way around, because you don't have 30,000 me or my brother or a couple other people here that you could actually sit down with somebody and say that they're capable of doing that. But I'll bet there are 1,000 people at Merrill Lynch that could do that, but not 30,000. So you end up having a place, Maddie, where you grind it down to the least common denominator, which is unfortunate, because the people that are, I mean, I know with the regulation and stuff at Pullman, we had 15 or 20 really good engineers that were capable of taking a, you know, blank sheet of paper and coming up with a railroad car, for God's sake. I mean, you know, electrical guys and other people. Yet, all of a sudden, you had 100 people in the engineering department, and you had other people in quality assurance and other people in quality control. And guess what they do? They all vie for the time of the 15 people and know what the hell they're doing.
Right.
Which I'm sure is what you're finding at your place.
Yeah. I mean, we, like I said, when I started, we were probably 600 or 700 employees. By the time we got acquired, we were up to about 1,600 employees, but then we got acquired by a firm that's 25 to 30,000 employees, and yeah, it really just, you know, bogs down every single process that you try to get done every day.
And the more people you have in the mix, you can imagine, you know, building the Golden Gate Bridge. Every time a guy put in a rivet up there on a spot where he could barely fit it himself, you had two people trying to squeeze in there and watch him. How the hell could the guy work?
It's really something. Yeah, I mean, I look at it from a sales perspective because that's what I do. So, you know, you get a contract that, you know, you work with a customer, you negotiate a contract, you negotiate what's included in the contract, obviously the pricing, the term, all that stuff, and you essentially get a verbal agreement in place. And so now you have to run it up your boss and your immediate people that know the business that you're in, they sign off on it, because obviously you're not going to even go to the customer until, you know, you have your approvals to protect yourself. And you think it's done, and the customer says, this looks great, you know, send me the paperwork, I'm ready to sign. And then all of a sudden, it has to go through five different finance people, five different, you know, sales enablement operations, whatever you want to call it, people. And they don't know your business at all. And so then they dissect the contract line by line by line, and it's a 2 or 3 week process, and your customer's going, hey, what are we doing? I thought this was done. So it's really just impossible to get anything done.
Well, the
and it's not enjoyable.
Well, that's why if you look at, speaking a little out of school here, if anybody's ever, this is sort of in my big part of the book stuff. No good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah.
A couple of friends of mine, one male, one female, and I think everybody knows who the female is, have tried to help this lady out, who all of a sudden got sick and has an apartment or a townhome that's. She bought it too high. Anyway, six, not working, whatever. It's a short sale, okay? The year and a half they've spent dealing with the bank and the multitude of people that have got on the phone, acted like they knew what they were doing, kicked them to the next person, then we're going, Steph, it's a year and a half. It's a friggin' townhome, for God's sake. To find somebody who can give you some word, tell you what you're doing, and the next day, you get somebody else, no, they couldn't possibly have told you that. Steph, a year and a half? I mean, for God's sake. I mean, and nobody knows who owns the place. It's some hedge fund, or it could be the Fed. Nobody knows who owns the mortgage. It is a nightmare. That's one of the reasons why I can't stand the idea that we only have these big four banks. Steph, they are so inefficient, it's scary.
Yeah. And I'm back to your earlier point, though, about going in and doing investing. You know, it used to be that you walked into a place like Merrill Lynch. They were a small little firm that had some bigger affiliates probably around the country, and you talked to somebody. And whether that person was really knowledgeable or not, they didn't just get directives from on high. They actually had to think about what they were recommending, and they actually had to know something, and they had to know the people in their community. And all of that personalization has been taken out by moving to these gigantic organizations. You know, and to Maddie's point, you know, knowing your job is not the most important thing. Now you've got to validate not just your job, but your decisions and the decisions of lower people, and I mean people closer to the actual business, closer to the clients, closer. You're validating that to people who have no experience with what you're doing. And, you know, this is one of the things actually that we teach clients a lot, is that you really want to empower your people on the front lines to make those kinds of decisions. They make better decisions. They're better informed. They understand the risks and rewards a lot better. And at the moment, our society, or I should say our financial or business sector, is not set up to do that. Everything's got to run up a chain to somebody five levels above you to make a decision about something that they really have no insight into. Maybe they did 10 years ago when they were in that job, but the world's changed a lot since then, and, you know, it's very inefficient.
Well, Steph, thank you very much. What about the savings and loan industry, where the entire mortgage industry is missing the part that when you had a savings and loan, the guy filling out the application, guy or lady, knew the neighborhood, knew the person. So now you got garbage in, you got garbage out, right?
Yeah, you're hitting an industry that I have a particular passion about.
What do you say we talk about it next week?
And back to self-regulating. They were self-regulating before you took the savings and loans out. It was not in their best interest to make loans that didn't make sense. They had to keep them on their books. It was a risk to their overall business. You know, you took them out and you lost that automatic capitalistic control.
Not to mention that Not to mention they sponsored my Little League team.
That was always helpful.
Mine too.
So, Steph, talk to you next week, hopefully. And S&P futures now down a whole 75 cents. And NASDAQ futures down 3.25. Hey, Mr. David Adelman here for the break. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Right here, right now, right now. Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Mr. David Adelman. He's Matt Weber on the board. Matty, I'm just sitting here watching David Evans. The Fed's Evans from the Chicago Fed. And I'm wondering, we probably could get him on. Unless he knew what I was going to ask him. Just saying.
He's not one of your drinking buddies?
No, the chief accountant was down there one night, though. It was interesting. Of course, he and I had an interesting discussion about inflation and other things.
You didn't throw popcorn at him, did you?
No, we don't. Okay. He's never been back, though. anyway. S&P futures down a buck. The S&P futures down 350. Dow futures are now unchanged. Again, Goldman Sachs came out and kind of missed, which is unusual for Goldman. So they're down 385. That's just took the Dow down. So that's like 32 points on the Dow. Don't take much to move the Dow. These stocks moving all over the place. These high-priced stocks. We're here. We've got the DAX up 13.1%. FTSE down 6.1%. CAC around up 4.1%. So, shall we say, it's not much of a snoozer over there. Nikkei, I have to ask David if the Nikkei is open, because I think they're gonna be closing. I got them up to 298. I think that might have been Friday. Well, Shanghai is down 10.3%. Hang Seng down 99.3%. We've got oil, down today, down 62 cents. Brent down 62. RBOB gas is even down. Not down to $2, man. It was up to 205. Gold's getting smacked, down 650, 1288. Silver down 9 cents, 1486. Goldman Sachs beat estimate for profits, but, revenue is down. All these guys keep buying their stock back. So these per share numbers, you got to look at with a grain of salt. You know, you look at the revenue number, too. What do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. The entire Chicagoland area is a parking lot, it would appear, according to my screen. All kinds of accidents, issues, spin-outs, slow travel times to consider as you're heading out this morning. I would take public transportation if you have the option, or work from home, to be honest. 8094 will start there, just across the Indiana-Illinois border on the Illinois side. There is all kinds of issues, multiple crashes on the long ramp from the 80 westbound to the Bishop Ford inbound ramp. It's very slick in that area, and there's solid traffic just before the Bishop Ford, and this is affecting both 80 westbound and the inbound Ford freeway on the south side, so keep that in mind. There's a crash as well to report, Ashen and Vermont Street, which is the Calumet Park area on the south side. On 80 eastbound, just before LaGrange Road, out near LaGrange in that area, or south of there, I should say, there is a crash on 80. Earlier crash on the Dan Ryan at 18th Street is all clear, but the Ryan, I-57, and the Ford are very slow. Same with the Stevenson, but the Eisenhower would be our worst expressway in both directions. We're still looking out our window on Congress, and it's a complete standstill, as it has been for the better part of an hour due to an earlier crash at the Circle and also an issue at Racine. And then further west, there is a crash on the inbound side of the Ike at First Avenue. So the Eisenhower in both directions is a complete nightmare. You do not want to even attempt to take I-290 in either direction. As far as the Edens is concerned, we had an earlier rollover crash this morning, but that's all clear. No accidents to report on the Edens or Kennedy, but very slow travel times. Plus, the inbound Kennedy express lanes were late to open this morning, so that didn't help things. Off the expressways, all kinds of issues to report on side streets due to snow in the western suburbs. Depending on where you were, there was 6 to 9 inches of snow. In the city, there was basically none, just a bunch of slush, and that's pretty much gone by now, but still some slick spots. So give yourself plenty of time this morning or take public transportation. That's probably your best course of action. Weather today, lots of sunshine, which will melt most of that snow, and then it'll certainly be gone by tomorrow, as we'll be in the mid to upper 60s. But today, partly cloudy skies, lots of sunshine, a high of 51. Right now, it is clear and 34 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 89 today. Right now, it's mostly clear and 64. In sports, White Sox went to New York and took 2 of 3 from the Yankees. They won yesterday 5-2. Cubs were postponed due to the weather yesterday. They traveled to Miami to take on the Marlins later on tonight. Diamondbacks beat the Padres 8-4. But the big sports story of the day was Tiger. He won his 5th Masters and his 15th major. First Masters title in 14 years after he won 4 between 97 and 2005. Took a 14-year break and then wins yesterday, shooting 13 under. First a major in 11 years as well. So congratulations to Tiger Woods.
Well, his map still looks pretty good, doesn't she? She was there at the end.
Oh, yeah.
The daughter and the son. Boy, the daughter.
The girlfriend?
The daughter looks as old as the girlfriend.
She might be.
Anywho, he certainly had a different. He has a different variety of ladies. I'll say that for him.
Well, there's no doubt that even after they tiger-proofed the Masters, quote unquote, that is, he plays that course better than anybody, and wouldn't be surprised if he won one or two more Masters. I don't know if he's going to catch Jack because I don't know if he can win at the other places. But I mean, Pebble Beach is hosting a major this year. He certainly won there before.
Don't confuse yourself with a regular course with a U.S. Open course. U.S. Open has the rough. Take Freddie Couples, for instance. Bad back up until a couple years ago. He still could compete at the Masters. Sometimes was winning after a couple days. For those of you who don't know, there's a second cut at the Masters, but there's no rough. There have been, of course, it's hard enough, but there's no rough. So if you have any sort of physical issues, the course is maddening as all get out.
Or age. Yeah.
But it's not the same as hacking through 8 inches of stuff where you better be 25 or you're going to kill yourself at the New Year's Open. I mean, I don't think Freddie Couples even wants to play at the U.S. Open. I mean, not even close.
David, what did you think about yesterday?
Well, when you talk about tiger-proof, I wonder why he's the only competitor, I guess, because he's Tiger Woods, who's allowed to wear a collarless shirt.
Actually, you know, everybody can now.
He was the only one I saw.
I know, but the rule has changed. It's not like he's paying the fine every day like Michael Jordan did.
I was excited a little bit, and against my son, because we always pick teams. I actually picked him third on my team, and he won, so that helped. And my son beat me for the long shot, but my team won in places and strokes.
Who else was on your team?
I had Molinari, I had Fowler, Woods, and who was my fourth one? He had Koepka and Dustin Johnson.
Wow, okay.
And I can't...
Johnson almost came back yesterday.
I can't even remember who my fourth one was.
Another putt would have dropped. Dustin Johnson was right there yesterday. He had a huge Sunday.
Yeah, only missed by one.
What happened to the rock star looking guy from Britain? He was there for a day or two, then he fell out, Fleetwood?
He qualified, but he was down on the list.
I can't take my eyes off this. We got to get this guy on. This Evans. The guy's not that old. Maybe that's his problem.
PGA Saluki writes in on Twitter, and you can follow us on Twitter, Stocks, the letter N, Jocks. It was just a week ago that David told listeners that gold needed to hold 1287 or we could see 1220 or 1210 before we saw new highs.
We're right there as we speak.
That's right.
Well, it better hold because I'm long gold.
It's literally there. The June futures at 1287.60 with an overnight low at 1287.20. So you are in the critical point literally now. And from earlier, just correcting, or you talked about the Nikkei. It was open, and it was up 1.37%. So there was divergence, not really divergence, mainland China, Shanghai Composite, and the Hong Kong, the Hang Seng in Hong Kong were down. The rest of the Asian markets were up. And on Goldman, they did miss top-line revenue, mainly because investment banking and IPOs was down, but the bottom line did beat.
Right, and they got them down
2%.
Yeah, so when is I caught some article yesterday in Bloomberg about does the Nikkei close for 10 days? They were talking about 10-day shutdown in the Nikkei. What are they talking about?
I don't know the answer to that. I know they have various national holidays, you know, that are of their own. I mean, they have a children's holiday, and they have their own version of the New Year. And, you know, I don't know. It's not like, you know, Chinese New Year where they go down for 5 to 10 days. It's not like that, but there are similar instances of national holidays.
Well, I'm listening to this Evans guy. I'm watching him. And, God, David, I never thought people would even come near this alligator again after living through it in the 70s and 80s. But he's talking about growth 1.75 to 2% this year. And he's looking for more inflation, still don't have enough. If you think right now they're bumping along at about a 1.5 to 1.75 inflation rate, even though last month was 0.4. If inflation is really, I'll be charitable here, David, If inflation is really 4, like you and I think it is, at least, then we have no growth. Now we have a president who's all over the Fed, who is now here. You know, I'll say this: if you just think, how can I say this charitably? Because I'm trying to be charitable this morning. If you think in the what Freud would say, if you think with your id, you know what that means, Manny?
No, I haven't heard that one before.
You ever study Freud?
No.
Well, what everybody has an id and an ego, and like the id is the animal part, the real simple part, and the ego is the part on top of that. If you think with your id, you can understand the president pretty easily. I did say something nasty, but I didn't mean to. If you think of, okay, I'm telling people that you can judge my presidency by the stock market, and you turn around and you say, wait a minute, who controls the stock market to at least a short term? The Fed. I got to gain control of the Fed, and I got to make sure that the Fed knows it's their job to pump up the stock market, because that's what I'm telling people how well I'm doing. The connection there is so simple and so obvious, but other people who have a little bit more of a, you know, I think a history of this, realize it's not that simple. But clearly, we have somebody who happens to be in the Oval Office who thinks it is that simple, it appears.
Yeah, his comments over the weekend were, if not for Fed policy, that would be up anywhere between another 5 to 10,000 points.
Which would mean he was even doing better.
Right.
you know, I mean, it's like, Except if you think on that level, you understand where he's coming from.
Right.
But I can't believe we're going to walk down. Right now, the last thing, we've been talking for an hour and a half about the middle class disappearing. The last thing that what used to be the middle class needs right now is runaway inflation. And these guys are, it's not there yet, but they're messing with it. Because the thing, David, I don't know, you're not older than me, but I came in on the tail end of that.
Even if it's 4 to 5.5%, which my view is it's somewhere in there. But even that, even if it isn't going to 10 or something that's runaway, it's you know, you're on a higher base. That's a significant dollar.
Right. Well, I guess what we learned in school when this was going on is the first pieces of inflation, the first pieces of it are so nice, especially to those that have, let's say, the upper percentage of the population economically, that you can't wait to have a little bit more. If you buy a building at 200 grand and at the end of the year it's worth 215, it's a good thing, isn't it? But if you keep it at 2-4%, it's sort of okay as long as it kind of permeates through the economy. But it never stays there, David. It's a problem. It doesn't stay there. It wants to keep going.
Right. And no, I get what you're saying. You know, let's do more teardowns, and you know, if real estate's going up, and this is hypothetical, 3.5-4%, and now it's 5.5. Well, maybe it's 10. And remember those few years where it went up 15 to 20 before the bubble burst.
Yeah.
You know, let's get to that point, then we'll liquidate.
Well, but the behind end of the thing that I remember vividly, because I was doing this stuff, the inflation numbers were coming through when there wasn't any inflation. So it's a very uneven, I'm sure the same types of bureaucrats running the CPI thing back then, the same kinds of people, they don't recognize it, and then once they do, it's in the system, then all of a sudden it just permeates its way through. And when you go to stop it, I think Volcker seriously miscalculated. He didn't have to do anywhere near as severe a stuff as he did if he just would have given it some time. Because it takes a while to stop going through the system, especially when you start getting, you know, wage push inflation, which we don't have yet. But once you get to there, actually, you're sort of doing the cities, right, in government, because there's cost of living increases there.
Yeah, I just wonder though, you know, if you say it's the same folks, you know, putting together the numbers and the CPI. I mean, I'm not sure it is or isn't the same people, but I don't think the algorithms are the same. I think the shopping cart with the 12 items or 14 items, or even the extended shopping cart, is different, and I think that the seasonal factors that they plug in are different. And I just don't think we're getting as clear a picture as we used to.
If I sat down for a week, David, especially with you and Hal, here's a couple of mathematical problems with the whole system. If something is, say, medical, all right, or say, whatever, automobiles, whatever it happens to be, if it's 2% of the basket, okay, and there's a one-time surge to it, then guess what? We're putting a gas tax on 50 cents. So now the gas price is up, whatever. It's up 20% in 2020. Okay, and gas is 5% of the thing. Well, next year, gas is going to be 8%. Okay, now you didn't pick it up the first year, and now that it's 8%, and there's no tax increase now for a decade, it actually becomes a drag on inflation. You never exactly pick up the 50%, 50 cents in the 1 year.
No, I get that.
Yeah.
But I think you've been a huge proponent of that the percentage of health care and its contribution to the basket is not recognized. And, you know, I read you that, you know, portion of that book that I read, you know, from a cardiologist, about it's not 1 year spike or 2 years or oh this happened or whatever. I mean, it's been pervasive for decades.
Well, what I'm saying is, if it is a spike, say for instance, I mean, I must be saying this wrong because it's not all that clear even to me, and I'm saying it. if tuition in Notre Dame is $10,000, so higher education is 8% of the basket. And all of a sudden, 1 year, Notre Dame goes from 10 to 20. All right? Well, you're only picking up 8% of the basket, but clearly $10,000 is a lot, right? So now it's 15% of the basket. But they hold it steady for 5 years. You never pick up the full piece of it because
right,
the full
right.
piece
now
of
that
it,
I understand.
And also when things enter the basket, what do you do with them? Okay, for instance, say you have a road that was never a toll road, and the geniuses say from Illinois say, okay, now it's going to or a bridge that was never a money bridge. Now all of a sudden it's $10 to go across the Skyway Bridge when it used to be 50 cents. Say now it's $10. Where do you put that? There's no place in the basket for it.
Right. No, I'm not saying it's an easy task. I just, you know, I always was a critic of you know, your theory that, you know, folks were manipulating the numbers and it was all a scheme. But I'm really coming around to that thing. I just, it isn't real what they're showing us.
Well, it isn't, it's very difficult to do. And it's also
conspiracy was the word I was looking for.
If they were, here, how can I put it right? If they were straight, it would be a hard job to do.
Right.
If.
Right.
And
capital I, capital F.
Yeah. Well, but the things that happen, even simple stuff, the toll road. I'll ask you this, or Maddie, you guys tell me. The toll road. We want to raise the tolls from $1 to $1.50. We really can't do that to our people because we just did. And by the way, they're not even supposed to be any tolls by now. And whatever. So instead of that, we'll let the people smart enough, like the three of us that have the transponder, we'll leave us the same, but we'll raise the dodo who's coming through from South Dakota to New York and doesn't have the, we'll make his $3. Now, is that an increase in toll or is that a stupido tax? Where do you put that?
I have no idea.
Matty, I mean, where do you put that in there? You ignore it? Or is it just a stupido tax? If the guy had the transponder, it'd be $1. It's his problem.
My own feeling is I think you just add up the grosser net revenues compared to the year before and, you know, divide, and that's your percentage increase.
You should divide by the number of cars.
Right.
But, I mean, I got to believe that right now, I think there's a transponder on the Triborough Bridge, I think. And was Dr. J telling us? If you have a transponder, it's like $5. If not, it's like 15 or...
Oh my God!
I could be wrong on that. But the tunnels there—if you don't have the transponder, you're getting
it's whacked. Good.
It's being stuck where the sun don't shine.
I think it's double on the tollways.
Yeah. So I mean, now what is that? If you're doing a CPI, is that a fuzzy foreigner tax? What is that? Is it a toll?
I don't know the answer to that.
I mean, we're trying our best to trick these guys, right? I mean, how in Chicago with the rents going up the way they are. With any kind of food going up the way it is, I mean, outside food, inside not so much. Taxes going up the way they are, medical expenses going up the way they are. How could you possibly say inflation is 2%?
They're telling us, and unfortunately, those are the only numbers we have to work with.
Well, yeah, I think that I'll be charitable and say the spread between the cost of living and the CPI has never been bigger. Right?
Say that again.
The spread between the actual cost of living and what the CPI is picking up has never been bigger. But now these guys are making policy like this, and they're pouring money into the system. But earlier in the show, is the fight between the right and the left, where everybody's squabbling, is that nothing but a cover for some people to take the place over? I hope not. But all right, tell us about the market this week. We only have 4 days of trading. Normally, be a slow week. We got all kinds of earnings.
Right.
No, I've only had Citigroup up 68
cents. I
think
earnings are going to be better than folks expect, and I don't. Who knows? They're still forecasting around 2.5 to 3% decline. I don't think it's going to be that. I think it'll be closer to zero, and I think the bank's earnings so far is, you know, kind of a marker that we're going to do better than what we expect. That said, I think the market's priced in a lot of positive, you know, from not just from earnings but from trade, and the trade is far from settled, and the trade stuff with the EU is heating up, and I think the market deserves a little bit of a break. So even if you know, there's better than expected earnings, which is what I expect. I think the market can, you know, finally take a little breath of air and maybe set back 2-3%.
David, why in the,
I'm not looking for big, but, you know, it's come from 2,800, it's come to 2,900 in the S&P real, real quick.
Oh, yeah. David, why am I being, Maddie, kick me from the other room. Why am I feeling on these banks? I just have a, I abhor what's going on here. I mean, we've set the world up so right for these guys. I think, David, they're making so damn much money and they're pouring it into their own bonuses and stuff that they refuse to report more because they're embarrassed. But I think they're actually...
There's something because, I mean, Goldman Sachs of today is not the Goldman Sachs that it was 5, 8, 10 years ago. They're really trying to be a bank rather than, you know, an investment bank. So you got to look at them in a different way. But nevertheless, you know, you take take an issue like that with the reputation that they have, and it's trading at a P.E. of 8.2 and a price to book of 0.97, and there's obviously something wrong. It's either way too cheap and the market's really, you know, pressuring them because they don't have the growth that they used to, or something's real. When you take Goldman Sachs and the multiple's half of what Verizon is, and Verizon has a 4.6 price to book, and Goldman Sachs has a 0.97, something's wrong.
I think they're paying the people internally too much.
Yeah, no, I you know, you're probably right. I don't know the internals of it, but you're probably right because the valuation is so bad, so cheap that it's probably too expensive.
Well, I mean, I think that as a shareholder, you're not gonna participate. I mean, do you think as a shareholder of any of these utilities, I would guess that the average shareholder, if you actually could find out, and if you looked at what the top 30 people make at those places, you'll say, I'm never getting this money.
Right.
How could these guys? They can make any amount they want. They can charge you a little bit more. I mean, in Illinois, one thing nice about Illinois is we still have competitive banking here to a large extent. Matter of fact, there's probably four small banks within 1,000 yards of PTI. But the other places. I mean, how much if Wells Fargo wanted tomorrow to just charge people? $25 a month if you had, you know, under $2,500 in your account, who's stopping them? Well, why not 30? Why not 50? I mean, it's not like people might move eventually, but they're going to get that money for a while. I mean, these guys, I've never seen anybody in this kind of situation other than maybe utility.
I mean, yeah, I don't know the answer to that, but like all the issues you're bringing up, it's obviously in the price, or the price would be another 20% higher.
Well, I think that the shareholders have come to think. I mean, this is what the first person to bring it up on the show, to any large extent, was Eric. He said the change in the last 25 years is it used to be in the robber baron era and the railroad baron era and those kind of, that at least the people doing the stealing owned part of the place. And they were stealing their money, essentially, because they owned it, and then the other shareholders got pretty much dragged along with it. This newer, he goes, these guys, they just, you think that when they have a board meeting at Commonwealth Edison, it's for the benefit of the shareholders? I mean, come on. I mean, some of those guys might be, but it's way beyond that.
Right.
I mean, so this managerial class is just huge.
No,
right, David.
I get it.
So what the... I think we actually could continue to go up here a little bit.
Well, the day before a holiday close and the 3 days after, traditionally, not so much Easter, but traditionally are strong. But I think the market's got to catch its breath. I'm not bearish, but I think that a little correction is way, way, way due.
Well, the VIX is down to 12.
12. 6 month lows.
Yeah.
I think there's some complacency, and I think it's time to buy some protection.
What do you think happens this year if we get two or three more months of CPI at 0.4% to where even Mr. Evans and the rest of the Fed, it's basically slapping them right in the face, and yet they got a president who's going to put their firstborn in jail if they raise interest rates again? What a climactic say fight this is going to be.
Yeah, I think you watch gold right here. it may tip us off as to what's really going on.
You think any of the young people care about gold other than on wedding day? They claim the Chinese are starting to accumulate it. I don't know. It doesn't look like it's bullet. It's going up since I read that.
Yeah, like you said, when they go buy jewelry or when they have their wedding day, that's about it.
Yeah.
India still cares.
Well, but I would care if I had a big brick in a safety deposit box.
Right.
But how do you, if you did have one, how would you get into the system? Can you walk into a futures firm like PTI and just drop the gold thing down and say, take it over?
That I doubt. I mean, there are dealers and there are storage and, you know, whatever. But no, I don't think if someone walked in the door with, and that was always my bearish argument. You couldn't walk into a store and say, give me a loaf of bread. They'd call the police.
Well, that's true. All right, David, thank you very much, buddy.
Okay.
SP Futures down a whole quarter. As if he was down 250. Tell you all about it tomorrow.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
A little early.
I gotta get out of here. I think I'm gonna lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.